Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, it's been an interesting week, hasn't it, in terms of, holy cow, in terms of justice, miscarriage of justice, perverted justice, and then we have privilege, not white privilege, not black privilege, not even gay privilege, but just power privilege in the case of Jussie Smollett. And, you know, I post a lot of things on Facebook. I've posted things on the Facebook page for the radio show for years. But nothing, I mean, I posted a lot of different things over the last 5 years on the radio show webpage, on the Facebook page, the Steve Noble Show, and nothing has moved as much as soon as the Jussie Smollett debacle became public yesterday. I mean, I heard about it immediately and just posted a really short thing on Facebook about Jussie Smollett, all charges dropped, but what do you expect? It's Chicago. And I've never seen a post move like that. It's up to almost 100,000 people have interacted with it, and it's been shared hundreds and hundreds of times. It's just crazy. And I think the reality is, on the heels of the Mueller letter coming out just on Friday and then getting unpacked over the weekend, which basically and essentially exonerated President Trump from Russian collusion, it left the door open to a certain extent on the issue of obstruction. But if there's no crime, what are you obstructing? So that's an interesting thing. And that's was a vindication for Trump, obviously. It's a vindication for everybody that's been defending the president on the collusion charge for the last 2 years. But it's not going to change anything for the Democrats. There's nothing that can happen much in the Senate. The Republicans control the Senate. And you're going to see some activity there, hopefully to go after the people that started this all in the first place, especially if you look at the dossier and all that mess. There's so many, the whole justice system, the whole notion of justice is just a wreck. But what do you expect in a country that's sat idly by for the last 40 some odd years while we've murdered 60 million children in the womb? What do you expect in the United States of America? I mean, really? So unplanned, on that note, unplanned, of course, opens nationwide. Some things going on right now, all kinds of red carpet events, especially crisis pregnancy centers and pro-life groups all over the country, which is awesome. A few theaters are open tomorrow night, Thursday night, but the main opening is Friday the 29th. We'll talk to Brooks Ryan after the bottom of the hour, who's really another kind of a very poignant character in the story and brings some much-needed laughter a few times in the story. But he plays Doug Johnson in the movie, who's Abby's husband. So we'll talk to Brooks Ryan for a few minutes after the bottom of the hour just to continue to light this fire for all of us to get out and support unplanned, support the unborn, support this movement, whether you're super pro-life, maybe you're apathetic, and I would challenge you and get in your face with as much love as I can muster to get off your apathy and go face the truth. Go hear a true story. Go face the truth. It's not bloody. It's not gory. It's a little bloody. Strike that. It's a little bloody when Abby Johnson takes RU486, which essentially forces a miscarriage at 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks. And that happens in her bathroom, and it happens in the shower, in the tub. And then it forces a miscarriage. You don't see anything discernible because they don't zoom in close enough. But that's a miscarriage. That's an abortion in the care, custody, and control of your own home in private, which is a brutal process. And that's pretty bloody because, well, you bleed when it happens. And then to see a baby evacuated out of the womb via abortion at 12, 13, 14 weeks, that's brutal. And to see that even on an ultrasound screen, which is what you see it on in the movie, that's how Abby Johnson saw it at the Planned Parenthood Clinic. You need to be willing to face the truth. We cry for the truth all over the place. This is the truth of abortion. This is the truth of Planned Parenthood. And this will take all of our apathy to task. So many people that I know that have come to the different screenings we've done last week across North Carolina said they were pro-life going into it, but all of a sudden they realized, I need to do something, and not just make a profession of pro-life, but I need to do something. So I'm encouraging you, challenging you, urging you, just go ahead and go to unplanned.com. Just go to the movie website, go to the ticket page, buy your tickets for this weekend. That's how you make sure you do your part to make sure it continues to stay in the amount of theaters that it opens in, which is over 1,000, and then grows. But that all is this weekend. okay? Unplannedfilm.com. That's the way you do it. So get off the dead and get on the dine, as my father used to say, and get involved. So the Jussie Smollett thing, which is really incredible and disgusting. But again, the only pure justice in the world will come when God settles all accounts himself. In the meantime, we grapple for it. We fight for it. But we have to realize this is the fallen world we live in. This is from a Fox News story. Jussie Smollett may have had the criminal charges related to his alleged staged hate crime dropped, but the Empire star may still face both federal charges and civil lawsuits in connection to the scandal. We'll see what happens there. This is in this article. They talked to a former Cook County prosecutor who said it was such a quick turnaround. Pre-trial diversions are usually a year long, and this happened so quickly. Weisberg is this gentleman's name, adding that he suspects the case's notoriety accelerated the proceedings. It's not the notoriety, because did you know that one of Michelle Obama's staffers, like her chief of staff, got all involved with this? That lady's name is Tina Chen, former First Lady Michelle Obama's chief of staff. She's been in the news quite a bit lately, mostly for her role in getting charges dropped against Empire actor Jussie Smollett. This whole thing reeks. Okay, it reeks of power and corruption. And the fact that, and I'm going to play this when we come back from the break. You listen to Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of the city, who's a liberal and very pro-gay. So he's not a gay bashing person, so to speak. And then the chief of police, Eddie, who's been a cop for 30 years. And these guys are ticked off. So you're going to hear that. I'm going to play 5 minutes of that because it's really amazing to hear the city of Chicago leadership going after the state attorney general's office. It's so corrupt. It's just disgusting. While Chicago police were still investigating an alleged hate crime against Smollett, this is the story I'm reading from by Ash Shao, and considering him a victim, Tina Chen, former First Lady Michelle Obama's chief of staff, reached out to Cook County State Attorney's Office asking for the investigation to be handed over to the FBI. So meddling already. I wanted to give you a call on behalf of Jussie Smollett and family who I know. They have concerns about the investigation, Chen sent in a text message to Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox on February 1st. Fox emailed Chen that same day to say, spoke to the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, the cop I was just mentioning, and she had and said that she had convinced him to reach out to the FBI to ask that they take over the investigation. Why the FBI? Do I really have to answer that? Fox also texted a relative of Smollett the same day. Spoke to the superintendent earlier. He made the ask, Fox texted. Trying to figure out logistics, I'll keep you posted. Does this not sound obviously like meddling, like power broker? Smollett's relative responded by saying, OMG, this would be a huge victory. Fox replied that she could make no guarantees, but I'm trying. And then, of course, she recused herself. So some more of those details. Then this incredible press conference when we come back. 'Cause you are more than I could ever dream. This world could ever see. Forever I'm discovering. Well, you spend, you know, tens of millions of dollars in a special counselor, Robert Mueller, and he comes out with his findings after tons and tons of evidence and tons of work, and we just dismiss that, right? That's wrong, you know. Then the Democrats are throwing him under the bus. He was their boy, man. He was their champion, and then until then it's not good enough. Right, because he didn't find for Russian collusion. So now all of a sudden Mueller's worthless, and they're going to continue to go after the president. And this is going to happen for the rest of his first term. If he gets reelected, it'll happen for the second term too. So you might as well get used to it because it's going to keep going. And so you got the kind of justice, that mess there. And then, of course, we have Jussie Smollett. So Mueller, by the way, and let me just jump back over to this. Listen to this. This is the depth of the investigation. Mueller issued more than 2,800 subpoenas, executed nearly 500 search warrants, obtained more than 230 orders for communication records, issued almost 50 orders authorizing the use of pen registers, made 13 requests to foreign governments for evidence, and interviewed approximately 500 witnesses, according to Barr's letter to members of Congress. And the Mueller investigation lasted almost 2 years. And so you've got an in-depth investigation there, and the left's just throwing out his results because it wasn't what they wanted. This isn't about justice. This is about a narrative. This is about a position that you already take, and then you do whatever you can to back up your position. But they're not going to change. Now, the amount of evidence doesn't matter. It does not matter. Truth is dead, right? And so it doesn't matter. You can pile up evidence for 2 years. It comes out, and it's not their deal. They thought they had Trump over the barrel for the last 2 years, and then it comes out. There's no collusion. Okay, well, now there's going to be obstruction of justice. Just pick the next thing down the row. So that's not good enough. And then you get Jussie Smollett, who in the course of a few weeks, everything gets dropped. And that's because you've got Tina Chen, First Lady Michelle Obama's former chief of staff. She's making phone calls and text messages to her buddy, Kim Fox, in Chicago, Cook County State's attorney. Kim Fox is also tied into Smollett's family. And there's plenty of pictures of Jussie Smollett with First Lady and President Obama. So this is all an inside job, inside fix. And they throw the Chicago Police Department under the bus. And then Fox recuses herself. It's really remarkable. And then this was another part that I didn't mention. I wanted to tell you this. This is crazy. So celebrity lawyer and former CNN analyst Mark Garagos took to Twitter Tuesday to celebrate what he portrayed as a full exoneration of one of his long list of celebrity clients, Jussie Smollett. So this guy's a real dirtbag, and he's like, apologies accepted in his tweet. But you know who he is? Did you hear the other day, Michael Avenatti, you know, another dirtbag lawyer? I'm not saying all lawyers are dirtbags, but in this case, both of these guys are. So he was Stormy Daniels' lawyer, right? Total scumbag. Now he's busted. This guy's going to jail for this huge extortion scheme against Nike. And originally they said an unnamed co-conspirator. You know who the co-conspirator is? It's out now. Mark Garagos, Jussie Smollett's celebrity lawyer. Wow. A big cesspool of power-broking inside player scumbags. Who all need Jesus, God bless them, right? So check this out. I'm going to play this. This is really remarkable. This is the press conference that the chief of police, what do they call him? Eddie Johnson, and then Rahm Emanuel. So Eddie's African-American. Rahm Emanuel, very liberal, very pro-gay. So you can't say they're playing that game. They're not playing those cards. But boy, were they mad. Check out this press conference. I'm going to let this play for a while. This is 5 minutes.
So listen,
this is the chief.
I'm sure we all know what occurred this morning. My personal opinion is that you all know where I stand on this. Do I think justice was served? No. Where do I think justice is? I think this city is still owed an apology.
30-year veteran.
Let me digress for a moment. When I came on this job, I've been a cop now for about 31 years. When I came on this job, I came on with my honor, my integrity, and my reputation. If someone accused me of doing anything that would circumvent that, then I would want my day in court, period, to clear my name. I've heard that they wanted their day in court with TV cameras so America could know the truth, but no, they chose to hide behind secrecy and broker a deal to circumvent the judicial system. My job as a police officer is to investigate an incident, gather evidence, gather the facts, and present them to the state's attorney. That's what we did. I stand behind the detective's investigation. I'll let Mayor Emanuel comment further.
Rahm Emanuel is rather upset.
Not only do I support the hard work of our police officers, the defective units, but I'd like to remind everybody, a grand jury indicted this individual based on only a piece of the evidence that the police had collected in that period of time. So a grand jury actually brought the charges. I think on three things I'd like to say. One, on financial costs, this $10,000 doesn't even come close to what the city spent in resources to actually look over the camera, gather all the data, gather all the information that actually brought the indictment by the grand jury on many, many, multiple different charges. Second is what I would call the ethical costs. And the ethical cost is you have, as a person who was in the House of Representatives when we tried to pass the Shepard legislation that dealt with hate crimes, putting them on the books, that President Obama then signed into law, to then use those very laws and the principles and values behind the Matthew Shepard hate crimes legislation to self-promote your career is a cost that comes to all the individuals, gay men and women, who will come forward and one day say they were a victim of a hate crime who now will be doubted. People of faith, Muslim or any other religious faith, who will be a victim of hate crime. People that of all walks of life and backgrounds, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, Now this casts a shadow of whether they're telling the truth, and he did this all in the name of self-promotion.
Talking about Jussie
and he
Smollett.
Used the laws of the hate crime legislation that all of us collectively over years have put on the books to stand up to be the values that embody what we believe in. This is a whitewash of justice. A grand jury could not have been clearer. To then say not only is the cost, the $10,000 doesn't come cost financially, but all the other repercussions of this decision it made, to me, where is the accountability in the system? You cannot have, because of a person's position, one set of rules apply to them, and another set of rules apply to everybody else. In another way, you're seeing this play out in the universities, where people pay extra to get their kids a special position in universities. Now you have a person, because of their position and background, who's getting treated in a way that nobody else would ever, sorry about that, would, don't get near, I'm doing near my sermon here, that would ever get close to this type of treatment. Our officers did hard work day in and day out, countless hours, working to unwind what actually happened that night. The city saw its reputation dragged through the mud, but I remind everybody it was not just the officer's work. That work, a piece of that work, was shown to a grand jury, and they made a decision based on only a sliver of the evidence.
And then you went on from there. So just remember, I mean, that the chief of police, Eddie Johnson, I'm all down with Eddie. But you got to remember who Rahm Emanuel is, all right? You cannot forget that. You cannot forget who Rahm Emanuel is. And Rahm Emanuel is in big trouble because of the violence in Chicago and all the crime, and especially the violence and the murder. And so Rahm Emanuel is an uber liberal. And who are all the people that were behind this? All uber liberal. Hey. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Yes, the Jussie Smollett case is important. The Mueller case is huge and important, but neither of them, in the grand scheme of things, is as important as the issue of life. And as we've been talking about the movie on plan for 6 months now, finally we're in opening week, opening in limited theaters tomorrow night, but Friday, widespread across the country, March 29th. Unplannedfilm.com is where you can go. Go get your tickets. Make the commitment now, okay? Don't eat your dinner tonight. Don't go to bed tonight until you get your tickets to see Unplanned. And we've been talking to a lot of the both directors, Chuck and Carrie, called in earlier the week. We've had a lot of different actors. We've had my friend Joe Knopp and Daryl LeFevers and Chris Jones as well, producers of the movie. But we've had a chance to get to know some of the other actors as well. And it's really amazing how God has pulled this whole thing together over the years. They had the rights to it 6 years ago, but he didn't allow them to make it until the time came. And now, in the middle of what's happening in our country, the timing is amazing. The time is totally ordained. And one of the people that's been a part of the project is Brooks Ryan. He plays Doug Johnson, Abby's husband, in the movie, and he joins us on the show today. Doug, I'm calling you by your movie name. Brooks, thanks for calling in, man. How are you?
Excellent, Steve. How the heck are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. So it seems like everybody in this movie that I've talked to and met, and I was on set for a couple of days out there north of Oklahoma City, had a very interesting story as to how they ended up in the movie themselves. So Brooks, how did you end up being in Unplanned?
Well, I'm no different. I was supposed to be working on the day of the audition, actually, and I made myself a little late for work, delaying my day job in the oil and gas business here in Oklahoma, and show up for the audition. The whole team's in there, Carrie, Chuck, producers, and it's like, okay, well, this is different. And all of a sudden, they go through the audition, things go well, and next thing you know, Carrie says, "Are you a believer?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Are you pro-life?" And, you know, he's about to give me the information about what everything the film's about in the story, and all of a sudden I get choked up almost. I have a hard time answering, not because I didn't know my answer, but because the day of the audition, my wife and I had a 7-month-old daughter, and we were 11 weeks pregnant with our second child, and he had no idea how pro-life I was at that moment, but specifically because my wife was once told by a doctor that you will never have children, and it's one of those deals that I could give you the full story. It would take a long time, but one of those deals that so many pieces of the puzzle that were put together for the timing of this film through the people involved, and I'm no different. And that moment, Carrie asked me, are you pro-life? I just wanted to say, you have no idea how pro-life I am right now, more so than I've ever been in my life. And I'm thankful for our children.
Yeah, because they, Chris had told me, one of the producers had told me that, doctors had said your wife was essentially barren and that you prayed over her and the power of God came into it. There was a miraculous healing. Obviously, however, God did that. And now you have two kids under 24 months. To say you're pro-life is an understatement, to say the least. So going into it and having all of that as part of your backdrop in the context of making this movie, what was it like for you to actually step into this role, play Doug Johnson? And I can't imagine, I've seen the movie four times now. I can't imagine how challenging it would be to be Abby Johnson's husband through all of that, because he was pro-life the whole time, yet she's in there running a Planned Parenthood clinic. How do you prep for something like that?
Yeah, it's hard to get to that mental space coming from where I was coming from, you know, from the audition to the time we started filming, and realizing, you know, we read as believers all the time, there's that God's unconditional love and mercy and grace for all of us, pieces of stupid all the time, and he's there to pick us up. And we love hearing stories about the redemption, the prodigal son, the overcomer, or the person that's turned there. We love hearing Abby's story, but it's always so much easier to receive or to give that person grace when it's not directly connected, when it's not our spouse, basically. You know, for some reason, we have the hardest time showing that to the ones we love most, and it's just like, I mean, not even a character, this real person, Doug, he just was so constant in his love and towards his wife the entire time. And,
yeah.
You know, talking with Doug, the real-life Doug, getting to know him, and just hearing the stories and the conversations that him and Abby would have, but knowing that basically when he was with Abby, when he fell in love with her, when they got married, he said, look, at this point in my life, I knew where she was at, where she was working, but there was no more, non-negotiables were off the table. I was committed to this woman. I made a vow to God, and I was going to honor that. And I was praying nonstop that she would leave this industry, she would leave this job, and it would look different for us one day in our family.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I knew what it took for a man to take on responsibility, take on the leadership role of his house, and still be that man that supports his wife and loves her unconditionally. Despite very, very different belief system.
Yeah, really, really challenging message to all of us, especially if you're a husband and perhaps your wife is an unbeliever, whatever the situation may be. There are so many other really profitable, biblical, spiritual lessons throughout the movie. The prodigal, as you mentioned, there's so much there besides the life issue, but obviously the life issue is front and center, as it should be. For you, Brooks, once you saw the final product and were able to sit down and watch the whole movie for the first time, how did it affect you? What did you come away with? What kind of impact did it have?
Gosh, it's had an amazing impact. We like you, have gotten to see it a few times at some of the different screenings, and each time was different. Each time you're just kind of left like, especially on watching scenes for the first time that I wasn't a part of during filming, seeing some of the clinic scenes and whatnot. But it really had the biggest effect for my wife and I, for both of us. The fourth time we saw it, we were at the Christian Worldview Film Festival there in Nashville, helping promote it, and we were away from our babies for the first time from the standpoint of overnight stay. This was the first time we had gone away from them. And to watch it that day, and just, you know, as you know, there are people that are sobbing and weeping during it. You know, there's a few chuckles, I like to say courtesy of Doug's character a few times throughout the film, which helps it. But
praise the Lord, yes.
Yeah, amen. Seeing that with not being able to go directly home and hold them and wrap them up was a totally different experience. And the film, from the day we filmed until, you know, that last time we saw it, or the most recent premiere here at L.A., we went to in L.A., it has helped move us, like we know it will, so many believers, out of the gray or out of the coward syndrome that we have as believers sometimes.
Yeah,
and say, I'm now pro-life with a purpose. And not only am I able to say that in an audition room when it comes to landing a role, I'm able to say it with works that go along with it. We just left last night. There's a clinic here. We live in Mustang, Oklahoma. We're from Mustang. There's a clinic here called the Evany Clinic. We're going to speak at their gala next month. They are our pregnancy resource center, like so awesome. Many, like Governor Huckabee talked about last week with Gateway Health Services. There's so many of these resource centers around our communities and states and nations that want to truly give safe health protection to these women. And we got to learn what they do, and it's just a matter of now. We're not just a sentence that says we're pro-life. We're pro-life with a purpose. Because of this film, unquestionably because of Abby's story, and we know that where we are now, come this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, after people see opening weekend, the nation is just going to swarm to this momentum, and these resource centers are going to be flooded with money, they're going to be flooded with volunteers, and it's going to be so awesome to see this branch, this network of God, truly putting people to work for being pro-life, not just saying it in a sentence.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And being pro-life with a purpose, and that's what I've been encountering as well, where people would say, listen, I've been pro-life as long as I've understood the actual issues. I've understood the truth. I love the Lord. I know the Bible. But it's just been a statement as opposed to something with purpose where they've actually gone out and said, I need to do something about this. I can't just be pro-life in name only or in spirit only. I actually need to put some feet to my faith. And it's such a beautiful way to push that out there and challenge people. Brooks Ryan playing Doug Johnson in the movie Unplanned, opening nationwide this Friday. Thanks so much for calling in, brother. God bless you. Thank you for being a part of this.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve. God bless.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you later. Thanks. And that was Brooks Ryan, another cool name, plays Doug Johnson in the movie. And yeah, you sit there the whole time. I was watching the movie. Like I said, I've seen it multiple times, and I'm like, man, how difficult would it be to be married to Abby Johnson? Forget that her as an individual. Just you're married to a woman who's rising up through the ranks of Planned Parenthood. And as you see later in the movie, when Abby finally gets out of there and she breaks under the weight of her guilt, complicit in the murder of 22 million children in her clinic. Complicit. All that blood is on her hands and on her soul and on her conscience. And that the fact that he stayed with her the whole time, and he pleads with her, and he talks to her, and he calls her out on her duplicity, but he stays with her the whole time. It's such a powerful challenge to any of us, a husband or a wife, to stay with the person and to never lose hope and to stay in prayer, whether it's a spouse, an unbelieving spouse perhaps, or unbelieving children. The prodigal is a big part of this because, listen, do you think Abby Johnson was too far gone, complicit in the murder of 22 million children? Not only did God bring her back, but the power of the blood of Jesus Christ overpowers the blood guilt of 22 million children. That's the power of the gospel. So forget the movie for a second. Do you know him? Do you know that power in your own life? Do you know Jesus that way as Savior? This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
Well, I got a message. I got a song. Can I get a witness? Tell me what's going on.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Hey, let me give you an opportunity if you want to sound off on the Jussie Smollett situation in Chicago. Feel free to call in. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show. If you want to get some of that off your chest, if you want to add something to the conversation, I would be more than happy to share some airtime with you. So your opinion, how do you feel about what's happened with the Jussie Smollett case in Chicago? Who do you blame? Is this just massive injustice, more elitism, and power brokers and inside players? Rahm Emanuel, who's the mayor there, who is an Obama person. I had some friends on Facebook Live. He just got stabbed in the back by the Obamas. Well, he can't do anything for him anymore. So there you go. So they're playing all that backroom stuff because they know people involved. They know Jussie Smollett. And they went above his head. They went above the chief of police, Eddie Johnson's head, and got all these charges dismissed. And that's an abortion of justice, is it not? So how are you reacting to that? What do you think about that? Who do you blame? 866-348-7884 is our number. 866-348-7884 or 866-34-TRUTH if you want to call in and kind of share your feelings and your thoughts and your opinion on this particular situation. I wanted to read from a couple of articles. These are really good, kind of wrapping up on a bigger kind of 30,000-foot level. Josh Walsh, who's a committed Catholic, writes a lot for the Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro. Here's from his article. He's writing on this. All charges against the hate crime hoaxer have now been dropped, and his record is being expunged, even though prosecutors say it's not an exoneration, and they, quote, stand behind the charges. After reviewing all the facts and circumstances of the case, including Mr. Smollett's volunteer service in the community, by the way, that was with Jesse Jackson's organization. Golly, this is such inside baseball. An agreement to forfeit his bond to the city of Chicago. Wow, $10,000 bond. He agreed to forfeit it. And he's done some community service in the past with Jesse Jackson, which I'm sure really affected and changed lives. Then they say, well, that's enough for us. We'll let him go. We believe this outcome is just is a just disposition, an appropriate resolution to this case. No, it isn't. Notice what isn't said here, Matt Walsh writes. They aren't disputing the evidence. They aren't suggesting that Smollett might be innocent. Rather, they're maintaining that Smollett's prior community service, almost nothing, and the few thousand dollars he paid in bond relative to the millions that they spent, is enough to resolve the matter. The real motivations behind this outrageous change, of course, are clear as day. Kim Fox, the state's attorney who initially recused herself from the investigation due to her association with the family, seems to have ultimately decided to step in. Text messages between Fox and Smollett's allies shed some light into how this particular sausage was made. Smollett and Fox's ties to the Obamas obviously played a role in what as well. In a word, this is corruption, barely making an effort to hide itself. I'm going to jump on over to Mac, who's calling right here in my hometown of Raleigh, North Carolina. Mac, you're on with Steve. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I felt like I should call in because it's kind of depressing, to be really honest. I call in here regular, and I love your show, and I love what Christianity tries to do, but to expect anything else from the world nowadays is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It really hits me hard because you know this happens all the time. Politics, you know, the elitism. I mean, when 2% of the population can own 90% of the money, something's wrong in the world, you know, and money always and power always gets you out of everything. It's so corrupt, but we keep putting the same people in office. We keep putting the same folks up there. Congress has a 13% approval rate, and we put them there. I don't know how to fix it. I think only God coming back can fix it.
Yeah, and it's
really depressing.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, Mac, and that's a great point. You know, we shouldn't be getting mad when a lemon tree drops lemons. I mean, that's just the world in which we live. We kind of accept the realities of brokenness. I think we still need to try to be champions of truth and justice, and to try to stand up for what is right, just to be a light in the darkness as it continues to get darker. But yeah, sometimes I'm like, throw my hands up. I don't even want to talk about it half the time because it's so ridiculous. But we are to blame. All these people that we're talking about in office here and there, we elected them. And a lot of people, 50% of Christians, aren't even registered to vote. But I guarantee you 100% of them complain all the time. So we have to look in the mirror as looking at the news.
See, we can't even talk about anything nowadays that's relative to Christianity. You know, gay, lesbian, any of this, you can't. You're politically incorrect. You're this. You're that. You're always labeled. You know, it doesn't matter if you try to reference the Bible. If you try to say it's not Max's thoughts or another Christian's thoughts, it's God. This is what his rules are, what he says. No, but somehow that's all changed too. It doesn't matter anymore. Everything goes.
Yep, that's exactly right. Mac, thanks so much for... Yep, I agree with you. Mac, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. All right, man, we'll talk to you later. God bless. And that's the deal. I mean, as in the days of Noah, right? Don't expect it to get better. It's not. I don't care where your eschatology is, your end times philosophy, your end times theology. The end times are coming. And as we approach the end times, things get worse. And we turn away from God, and we suppress the truth, and we replace it with a lie. And then Hollywood, just like people on the left, just like wealthy people, there's two different systems of justice here. That's clearly on display. So a little bit more from Matt Walsh. The real motivations behind this outrageous change, of course, are clear as day. He's talking about the interaction between Fox, the state's attorney, and Michelle Obama's former chief of staff, and they're all friends, and the Obamas know Smollett. And so all that stuff is in there, barely making an effort to hide itself, he said. You'll see cowards in the media try and obscure the point by talking about how confusing this case is and lamenting that we'll never know what really happened. We do know what happened. Jesse Smollett staged a hate crime and exploited racial strife for his own gain. Nevertheless, liberals are celebrating this miscarriage of justice, which forever precludes them from pretending to be outraged about wealthy disparity and the rich, which is a great point. Smollett used both his wealth and stature to escape the rightful consequences of his actions. If that isn't privilege, then there's no such thing as privilege at all. And those are great points, and that's what we see. Those are unequal weights and measures. The Bible talks about it expressly in both the Old and the New Testament. God is a God of justice, and ultimately, of course, a God of fairness. And none of that's happening here. But we shouldn't be shocked. I mean, I'm not. But I am disappointed. I am outraged by it. And I think we need to try to point out, based on a biblical worldview, the need for truth and justice. And as we move further and further away from God's word, the world just gets more chaotic. You'll see more injustice. You'll see more abuse. Hate crimes and all that stuff, it all gets twisted, and it just ends up being moral anarchy. Dr. Michael Brown was writing in The Stream about the subject, and he kind of went down some of the same roads that a lot of these folks are going down. Then he brought out Rahm Emanuel, the very pro-gay mayor of Chicago, who said, without a doubt, this is a whitewash of justice and sends a clear message that if you're in a position of influence and power, you'll be treated one way. It is wrong. He added, Mr. Smollett is still saying that he is innocent, still running down the Chicago Police Department. How dare he? How dare him, Emanuel said. How dare him after everybody saw? Is there no decency in this man? Now, I'm only going to listen to the moral pontifications of a man who supported abortion his entire career. I'm not going to listen to that for long, for obvious reasons. Do I really need to explain that? This is from Ben Shapiro over at the Daily Wire. He broadens it out to include Mueller in this, okay? Here's why we don't trust our institutions. This week, Special Counsel Robert Mueller released his long-awaited report on alleged collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government to impact the 2016 election. His conclusion? No collusion. It's been apparent for quite some time that Mueller would end up here. Every indictment has been based on an ancillary crime, not the chief question of election conspiracy. Nonetheless, the final result came as a bombshell. That's because for 2 years, the mainstream media have treated Trump-Russian collusion as a reality. Facts would eventually arrive to fill in the gaps in the narrative. Surely Trump's presidency would crumble when the deuce a machina, the Mueller report, arrived. But that didn't happen. And so the media are left with unending egg on their faces, having suggested continuously for years, literally, that Trump was illegitimately elected and that his campaign had engaged in treasonous activity to prevent the rightful president, Hillary Clinton, from assuming office. That narrative found support in leaders from the Democratic intelligence community, Representative Adam Schiff, who's still going off from California in the House Intelligence Committee, former CIA Director John Brennan, former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, former Acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe suggested that Trump could be a Russian cat's paw, former FBI Director James Comey implied that Trump had fired him for nefarious reasons, on and on and on. Our intelligence leadership, in other words, humiliated themselves. This is Matt or Ben Shapiro writing. Meanwhile, in Chicago, Cook County prosecutors agreed to drop charges against alleged hate crime hoaxer Jussie Smollett. We have key institutions betrayed their initial. Have these key institutions betrayed their initial mission? Mission creep, Shapiro calls it. The job of the media is to objectively cover stories, not to drive narratives. The job of the intelligence community is to diligently follow evidence, not to follow its cognitive bias. The job of the state's attorney is to prosecute crime, not to play politics. Without defined roles, our institutions crumble. This is Western civilization he's talking about at this point, okay? Treating institutions as mere tools to be wielded in pursuit of some higher goals leads to the destruction of those institutions. They become little more than weapons aimed by those in power. This is what, by the way, this is what Obama did with the IRS, going after faith-based groups and conservative groups, using the IRS. He weaponized it. That's dangerous stuff, Shapiro writes. We should be able to trust our press. If we can't, then we can no longer base our Republican decision-making on a common set of facts. We should be able to trust our intelligence community and our prosecutors. If we can't, then we can't support granting them the power they require to protect us. But protecting institutions has taken a backseat to do-goodism. Objective, quote-unquote objective, journalists see themselves as crusaders. Political members of the intelligence community see themselves as protectors. Prosecutors see themselves as emissaries of social justice rather than as part of a broader, more objective system of determining guilt and innocence. Institutions only mean more than the people who comprise them when the people who comprise them value the institutions more than their own politics. That's being lost. The result is the continued atomization of our society, which means it's falling apart. But that shouldn't shock anybody. The further away you get from God's word, from truth, the more insanity you get. So unfortunately, I can't tell you to look forward to better days, not until Jesus himself comes back. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, tomorrow with Dr. Danny Aiken, the president of the seminary. God willing, I'll talk to you then. And like my dad always said, and this is helpful to remember, ever forward.